This is a Rally Week in Review for the week of March 9th, 2009. I'm James Turner, contributing editor at O'Rally Media, and this week we'll have a conversation with editor Kurt Cagle about troubles in iPhone land, a follow-up interview with Andrew Bunny Huang about the realities of doing manufacturing in China, and we'll have the answer to last week's pod quiz and a new pod quiz that can win you an O'Rally book. All that on O'Rally Week in Review. Several weeks ago, we talked to Andrew Bunny Huang about his experiences with manufacturing in China. We got quite a few comments on the article. A lot of them seemed to indicate that Bunny hadn't had a really honest experience of what working in China was about. Bunny has joined us to respond to those questions. Thank you for taking some time.
Hey, no problem. Thanks.
The common comment was you had seen kind of like the Potemkin Village version of Chinese manufacturing, and it was much worse than what you saw. How do you respond to that?
First, I guess I wanted to clarify that, I guess, like, I'm not here to respond to the comments. I'm here because you asked me to respond to the comments. I'm actually perfectly happy enough to leave the comments lie. Yeah, I mean, I think it's quite possible that I've gone to the factories and they've pulled the wool over my eyes and I couldn't actually see what was going on. And it is definitely the case that when you visit the factory, they like to know ahead of time. And for the good factories, especially, you know, the owners live at the factories as well, with the workers. And so it's a bit like going to their home. They want to, like, you know, so if you have a guest coming to your home, you tend to, like, tidy things up a bit. You clean up what's in the sink and you know, hide some papers that you have laying out that you don't want people to see, that kind of thing. And so I think they do the kind of the same thing. They kind of tidy up the place for you, put a sign out to welcome you, that kind of thing, to make you feel more like a guest. That being said, a lot of the factories that I work with in China, I've spent, weeks at a time at the factory, working with the workers on the line. So it's not like so much of a guest as more of a temporary resident at the factory. And in those factories, they definitely stop, putting out the welcome mat for you after the first couple of days, right? And they're not so stiff around you anymore. And you get to see a lot more what the factories are really like. That being said, there's good factories and there's bad factories. I work with a firm called PCH China Solutions, and they, vet out factories for me before I even go and see them, right? So that I actually rarely get exposed to really bad factories. I've seen some that I didn't like, and, obviously I don't work with them. And some of them obviously try to cover things up. When you go there, you can see, evidence that things have been covered up, and you just instinctively learn to avoid working with them. So, I mean, of course, I'm not saying that there are no bad factories in China and they don't cover things up. I mean, they do cover things up and there are definitely bad factories there, but we're very careful to try and avoid working with the bad one.
All right. Well, Andrew Bunny Huang, it's been nice to get back in touch with you and we appreciate you following us with us. We got a record number of responses to last week's pod quiz question, which asked what Indian city known for outsourcing was changing its name and what it was changing it to. Ronaldo Ferreira of Sao Paulo, Brazil, was the first person to correctly answer that Bangalore was changing its name to Bengaluru. Ronaldo chose iPhone SDK application development by our own Jonathan Sadarsky, and it'll be going out to him shortly in electronic form. Stay tuned later in the podcast for the new question and your chance to score an O'Rally book. It's time for our weekly chat with the Ever O'Rally editors. Tim O'Brien isn't available this week, but I do have Kurt Cagle on the line. Kurt, this week, Jay Freeman, who is an iPhone developer known for his jailbreaking software, announced that he's going to launch an alternative iPhone store specifically selling jailbroken applications. Apple has immediately responded by indicating that they're going to look for a DMCA violation on that. Where do you think this is going to end up landing?
Apple has long been in a situation where they are trying to effectively control not only their market, but their message as well. Obviously, they do not subscribe in any great detail to the notion that their products need to or should be anything but proprietary. And so it's perhaps not surprising that this kind of an effect is going, or that this kind of action is taking place. Given that, however, I suspect this is just the first of many such instances. This is a case where Apple is being deliberately baited, perhaps to bring a precedent, perhaps to put them into a position where they have to acknowledge that, well, maybe there is a large community out there that doesn't want to be constrained to this particular device. So I don't necessarily think that this is going to end well for the developer, but I do think that this may be the first step in a much larger and more complex battle.
Well, to some extent, with the Android and the new BlackBerry application stores, which have indicated they're not going to hold this kind of death grip on what gets to go into the stores, it strikes me that Apple is going to, at some point, going to have to evolve, especially given some of the fundamentally missing functionality on the iPhone, which will start to be exploited by the Android and the BlackBerry. I mean, for example, with a jailbroken iPhone, you can capture video. With a non-jailbroken iPhone, you can't. They're going to have to evolve, or they're going to start to become less a significant player over time.
Perhaps. Although, keep in mind that Apple has always been kind of a rule unto themselves as far as that space goes. Realistically, I think that what you're seeing here is an attempt to push out the market as long as possible on the proprietary side. They know, you know, the market at this stage is not proprietary friendly. They know that they have a very limited time that they can do this. They know that there is an end game that will ultimately end up resulting in them opening up the interfaces in question. But the longer that they can push that, the longer they have to potentially make profit out of it, until such things reach a point where it's untenable. They're not going to lose much in the way of publicity. Everyone knows this is Apple's position. The people that are going to be most defensive about it are people that were going to be defensive about it anyway.
Well, I mean, the other question you get into is, the one thing you can say about Apple, although I have no idea how much they actually check, and I am an iPhone, registered iPhone developer, is how much less secure it's going to be to buy an application from a third party, where I'm sure Apple is going to come through and say, well, God knows what that application does and what, you know, what vulnerabilities it may have.
It's the caveat emptor principle. You know, if the buyer is willing to purchase it, there is no reason that... I don't see any real harm to them making the risk. The worst case scenario is that, well, they blow the phone up. You know, in most cases, that's not going to happen. You know, in most cases, what you're seeing here is a struggle to basically open up what has been a closed market. You know, long term, I don't think that Apple can maintain their monopoly on this. There are simply too many players, simply too many different participants, each of which would like a slice of it themselves. And the iPhone is going to lose its appeal over time as other other vendors come out with their own products that have greater functionality. So it's a waiting game right now. They're just trying to wait it out.
All right, well, Kurt Cagle, it's been a pleasure as always talking to you. We'll talk to you and hopefully Tim again next week.
Thank you.
I finished up playing World of Goo this week, a charming game which I will also mention is nice because it has absolutely no digital rights management on it. This week's pod quiz question comes from the world of Goo, and something that struck me as particularly funny when I played it. If you play through enough of the game, you'll come to a series of puzzles set in cyberspace, and one in particular will be amusing to anyone who has ever worked in cryptography. Tell us what three well-known hypothetical cryptographic characters appear as a level in the world of Goo. If you know the answer, send it to podquiz, P-O-D, Quiz, at O'Reilly.com. If you're the first person with the correct answer, you'll win your choice of any book in the O'Reilly catalog. If you live outside the United States, we'll send you a PDF version. Good luck! That's it for this week's O'Reilly Week in Review. Thanks for spending this time with us. We'll be back next week with more commentary, interviews, and a new quiz. Our theme song was composed by Father Rock. For O'Reilly Media, this is James Turner.